Well, let's get started. We are starting a new book today, and we've got such a big crowd, and Micah was not remarkable to me, or else I just didn't get enough time to study like some of the other Old Testament prophets that we've had. But we will be studying the book of Micah, and who knows something? I mean, I sent out an email. What do you guys know about Micah?
Seems to go along a little bit with Isaiah.
Yes, he does.
At the beginning, they kind of got the same intro.
And Jeremiah mentions him 100 years later. Yeah. So he was before Jeremiah. So kind of a small club, I guess, when you think those that are really called by God and wrote it all down. Well, let's get started. The word of the Lord which came to Micah of Moreseth in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, which he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. Well, right there you got a mouthful. It tells us where he came from. And this little area that he came from was right on the border of Judah and where the Philistines are. So he didn't come from a big city. So number one, he's not in New York, L.A. He's kind of in the flyover country, way out in the, kind of like Amos was. Mm-hmm. A farmer comes in from the outskirts, and he comes to the city. So he's kind of a little bit of an outsider coming in, trying to tell everybody that's in the city what they're doing wrong. And, you know, they probably didn't really appreciate it a whole lot. But so that's number one. Number two, his prophecy spans three different kings. And now you remember Hezekiah was a great reformer. Hezekiah, you know, had a lot of wickedness and that type of stuff with Jotham and Ahaz. And then Hezekiah comes in, rediscovers the word, and decides to clean things up. Not completely, but he, you know, somehow this was starting to make sense. And a lot of the commentators believe that Micah was one of those that kind of made him understand that destruction was coming. Of course, by the time Hezekiah came, he had seen that the northern kingdom had fallen and that they were next. So they'd already lost their brothers, the other tribes, and so they were the only thing that was left. Verse 2, "Hear, O peoples, all of you, listen, O earth, and all it contains, and let the Lord God be a witness against you, the Lord from his holy temple. For behold, the Lord is coming forth from his place. He will come down and tread on the high places of the earth." So he's setting up this word picture again, just like most of the prophets do. He's saying that God is going to come down out of his high place, because we know that God is in the heavens. And then he's got him almost as this large giant who's going to step from one mountain to another mountain and from one place to another place. And so he's painting this word picture. The mountains will melt under him, and the valleys will split like wax before the fire, like water poured down steep places. All this is for the rebellion of Jacob and for the sins of the house of Israel. What is the rebellion of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? What is the high place of Judah? Is it not Jerusalem? For I will make Samaria a heap of ruins in the open country, planting places for a vineyard. I will pour her stones down into the valley and will lay bare her foundations. All of her idols will be smashed. All of her earnings will be burned with fire, and all of her images will make desolate. For she collected them from a harlot's earnings, and to the earnings of a harlot they will return. So what did he say in all that? Kind of accused them of the sins that they're doing, right? And he says, Jerusalem's high place, or Judah's high place, is right where the temple is. They're defiling the temple. Their high place, in Samaria, the high places were the mountaintops where they put up idols. Well, he's saying you're putting up idols also in the temple in Jerusalem. And he said, for I will make Samaria a heap of ruins. And, of course, that happens just very shortly.
Christ still kind of couldn't help but think about what he was talking about when he's talking about telling the disciples one stone, even if there's another time coming of another destruction, where one stone won't be left on top of another.
Right.
So there's still, Micah could have been alluding to that too, just a little bit.
Could be. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they're going to have several times when this is all taking place. Anyway, all her, in verse 7 it says, all her idols will be smashed and the earnings will be burned with fire. They're talking about the temple prostitutes because they were worshiping fertility gods. And so, you know, a guy would go to temple and be a regular deacon in the church and go in there and have sex with the temple prostitutes and pay them off. And then they would pay the temple. And then from that money, they would go buy more gold and make more statues. And what Micah is saying here is that another army is going to come in. They're going to take all this money that you've put into to these idols, these golden idols, and they're going to take that and take it back and melt it all down, and it's going to go into their idols. So, see, it's just perpetuating. He's going to wind up sending them away to the Assyrians, and the Assyrians are going to take them away. So what you wanted was you wanted to worship idols, and you didn't want to worship the Lord your God. Well, we're going to take you off. And the Assyrians are going to take you away. And so you're going to get that every opportunity to worship the idols that you want to worship and no longer worship God. But you're not going to be in your homeland. You're going to be slaves of another people. Verse 8, because of this, I must lament and wail. I must go barefoot and naked. I must make a lament like the jackals and a mourning like the ostriches. For it. Ostriches. I just can't help. He's looking for new names for new animals, and that comes out of the Bible from time to time, you know, whether it's a camel or whatever. But, Actually, I did have when I was looking at, now that you mentioned that, when I looked at a different version, it did say owls, and they made references to how each one of those represented something. For the wound is incurable, for it has come to Judah, it has reached the gates of my people, even to Jerusalem. Tell it not in Gath, weep not at all at Beth. Okay, this is going to start a whole litany of names that I can't pronounce. But why, if you've read this already, why is he calling out all of these cities? Each one he's calling out, and they're giving a different, each one has a different name. But in the Hebrew, he has taken not just the name, but each one represents something. I'm going to give you a couple of these. Well, let me read it first. Tell not the city of Gath. The city of Gath belonged to the Philistines, and it hurts Micah to think that the Philistines will rejoice at the pain of God's people. That's the reason he included that one. In Beth Horah, roll yourself in the dust. Following to the end of the chapter, Micah uses puns and plays on words to talk about the judgment coming upon the cities of Judah. These towns were clustered in the Shephelah, the lowlands between the coastal region and the mountains of Judah. Though Micah uses puns, this isn't about clever word games. It goes back to the ancient idea that a name isn't just your handle, but describes something poetically, your character and your destiny. And showing how the names of cities is in some way a prophecy of their destiny, Micah shows how our character becomes our future. Now, Beth Horah to Micah. I keep wanting to say Michael. My brother's name is Michael. Every time I say the M and the H, it just, I want to say Michael. To Micah, Ephrah, or whatever it is, sounds like the Hebrew word for dust. So he told the citizens of Beth Ephrah to roll in the dust in anticipation of the coming judgment. So he's using their name symbolically to tell them, you know, what's going to happen to them and that kind of stuff. Saphir, the name of this town, sounds like the word beautiful. It won't be beautiful for long, and Micah warns the citizens of Saphir to prepare for judgment. Zanan, the name of this town, sounds like the Hebrew word for exit or go. When the siege armies come, they won't exit at all. They will be shut up in the city until it falls. Beth Azel, the name of this town, means nearby city. When the army of judgment comes, it won't be near or helpful to any other city. And it just goes on. Each one of these, I'll show you the list if you want to look. But what he's doing is kind of calling out and making this personal for, you know how when you hear a song and it mentions Nashville, you know, or some town that you're actually from if you're not from Nashville, and you kind of rise up and go, wow, yeah, isn't that cool we got mentioned? Well, he's calling all these people out. He's calling all these little cities out, and they're feeling important, but they're feeling important for the wrong reasons. Questions or comments?
Verse 9 talks about the wound of Jerusalem will be incurable. I'm just wondering, he's talking about, I guess, in the temple, the false doctrine or the false teacher will continue on. It will never end.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
I went over here to John 10, where it talked about the hireling. Jesus talked about the hireling, how he leaves the sheep and how he doesn't take care of the sheep and he allows the wolf in. So it's still going on by the time Jesus gets, in Jerusalem area, Judah area, is still going on. So I just found that verse just kind of popped out at me a little bit.
One of the commentators that I really like a whole lot has come up and said, he said, for her wound is incurable, for it has come to death. It has reached the gates of my people, even to Jerusalem. And he says, how can you have something that is incurable to God? How do you have something that's incurable? God can cure all of these things. So how is it incurable? And this commentator said, it's just like when you go to the doctor. I mean, where I'm going to use Paul as an example. If Paul went to the doctor and the doctor said, let me look at your head, and he had a cap on, he goes, no, it's all good. Don't worry about it. He's not going to show it to the doctor. You walk in, and you've got a wound right here. And the doctor says, how are you doing? You're going, fine. You never reveal that to the doctor. So these people will never reveal their sin to God. They won't admit to the fact that they are sinning. They won't admit to God and ask God for forgiveness. So God can't forgive them because they won't admit that they've sinned. And it's the same thing with us. If you've got sin in your life and you can't even admit that to God, then there's no way God can heal you or cure you because you won't admit it.
And a lot of it's going on within the religious place. They don't really think they're doing wrong. Yeah. That kind of the deception of the religious part.
Yep. Well, and he's already called them out saying that the temple is the high place. When you don't call the temple the high place, he's being derogatory, saying that it's the same as Samaria, where they put up the idols in the high places. Anybody else? Good catch. I meant to do that, but you can tell I'm a little groggy today. I'm just trying to get back. All right, chapter 2. Woe to those who scheme iniquity, who work out evil on their beds. When morning comes, they do it, for it is in the power of their hands. There's a lot in that little. I don't think I wrote that down either. I didn't. What does he mean here? Well, God is calling people out who premeditate. You know you're going to sin, and you premeditate that sin. It doesn't just happen. It's not like an accident. You think about that sin, and then you go ahead and do it to begin with. And he says, who work out evil on their beds. So they're thinking about this all the time. They're going to do this. When morning comes, they do it, for the power is in their hands. He's calling out. What happens in the morning when the sun rises? Well, darkness is dispelled by the coming of the light. But with that coming of the light is when the gates are open and when the men of the city will sit in judgment. And so he's calling out these people who have the power. When the morning comes, they do it. They do this sin. They take advantage of people, for it is in the power of their hands. They covet fields and then seize them, and houses and take them away, and rob a man and his house, a man and his inheritance. Therefore, thus says the Lord. So he's calling these people of wealth, people of power, people of influence, to not take advantage of the poor, to not take advantage of their situation, to help others and not do that just for their own personal gain. Therefore, verse 3, thus says the Lord, behold, I am planning against this family a calamity from which you cannot remove your necks, and you will not walk haughtily, for it will be an evil time. On that day, they will take up against you a taunt, an utter and bitter lamentation, and say, we are completely destroyed. He exchanges a portion of my people. How he removes it from me. To the apostate, he apportions our fields. Therefore, you will have no one stretching a measure line for you by lot in the assembly of the Lord. Do not speak out, so they speak out. But if they do not speak out concerning these things, reproaches will not be turned back. It is being said, O house of Jacob, Is the Spirit of the Lord impatient? Are these His doings? Do not my words do good to the one walking uprightly? Recently my people have arisen as an enemy. You strip the robe off the garment from unsuspecting passersby, from those who return from war. The women of my people you evict, each one from her pleasant house. From her children you take my splendor forever. Arise and go, for this is no place of rest, because of uncleanness that brings on destruction, a painful destruction. If a man walking after wind and falsehood had told lies and said, I will speak out to you concerning wine and liquor, he would be a spokesman to this people. Verse 12, I will surely assemble all of you, Jacob. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. I will put them together like a sheep in the fold, like a flock in the midst of the pasture. They will be noisy with men. And this is where, come on, Philip, I know you're coming in here.
Mm, yeah, that remnant part.
That's just that word. We just call that something else besides a remnant. Yeah. But when you think of a remnant, most of us do, when you think of a remnant, you're thinking of a small part, right?
It says that.
I mean, what does it say? I will, verse 12, I will surely assemble all of you, Jacob. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. Well, he's saying all of you to begin with, but then he says, the remnant of Israel. I will put to get them together like sheep in the fold, which is customary to what we normally know of God calling himself of.
But there's a separation there between Jacob and Israel.
Well, you know, Jacob is mentioned 11 times in Micah.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it means Israel. Sometimes it means the entire Judah and Samaria. Sometimes it means the patriarch.
Yeah.
And I don't have the breakdown. I can probably get it for next week. So he's using these interchangeably, which is really kind of strange. But I think here he's talking about the remnant of all of Samaria.
But Jacob, you know, that's before he got his new name, Israel.
Right.
He was kind of, I mean, not that he didn't sin after his name was changed.
Right.
But there's something new started when he was named Israel.
Right.
While he was still Jacob, he was just like Abraham was Abram.
Mm-hmm.
When God renamed him a little bit. So, looks like to me there's a separation between Israel and there's a remnant within Israel of Israel.
Right.
All is not necessary. You know, it's singular.
Right.
And it's huge. It's not plural.
But here's what I'm looking at. It says, I will put them together like sheep in the fold, like a flock in the midst of the pastures. They will be noisy with men. So we're not talking about two or three or four. We're talking about a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be a lot in this remnant, so it's not like a small group. And then tell me what you're saying. Here, I'm going to go back over to Miss Carolyn again. What did you say? Verse
13.
Just the first line.
The breaker has come up before them. They have broken up and have passed through the gate and are gone out by it. And their king shall pass before them, and the Lord on the head of them.
So who's the breaker?
The Assyrians. According to the forest, what happened in the Old Testament, mine says the Assyrian, that the breach is the breach, is the breaker. He has broken through the breach into Israel.
I'm not sure. I'd heard a different thing. What else, y'all? Who else has got a different interpretation?
Going out. If the Assyrians broke, they would be breaking in, wouldn't it?
Mine says up.
Yeah, mine says up. Broken out.
The breakers come up before them. They have broken up.
Yeah, and then what's your next sentence say? They break.
They pass through the gate.
They pass. See, mine says they break out, pass through the gate, and go out and by it.
Yeah.
Does anybody else have a different? Yours just says yours doesn't say they break out, pass through the gate.
Broken up and pass through the gate. They are broken up and have passed through the gate. And are gone out by it.
Well, here's a different idea behind this, and one that I had seen and tended to accept until what he says does kind of make sense.
Is it Jesus? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Because the breaker goes up before them, and the breaker is the one who breaks out, pass through the gate, and go out by it, so their king goes on before. So he's saying, and so the king.
So they might have a reference. I've got a reference to Isaiah 52:12, which mine says that you will not leave in haste or go in flight, for the Lord will go before you. The God of Israel will be your rear guard.
So the one commentator that I had. And this guy, he really is the Reader's Digest of a lot of different commentaries. And when I don't have time, I just go to him. And he's really pretty good. He's a preacher that preached over in Germany for a while. And I like what he does, and it makes sense to me. And then I try to fill in with some other commentators. But he said that the breaker is Jesus, and it's the pre-incarnate Christ. And he's basically, and that's the reason you're getting this, I will put them together like sheep in the fold, you know, because he's bringing up that imagery of God as being the Father and as God of being the shepherd who's going to lead his people on out. And so this remnant that's going to come, he's going to lead them out through this adversity, through the gates, through, you know, and so their king goes on before them, and the Lord at their head is what
John 10 can really kind of goes along with that a little bit.
Read that.
It says, I am the good shepherd, and know of my sheep, and they know me. And as the Father knoweth me, even so I the Father, will lay down my life for the sheep.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, with that imagery, that made more sense to me.
Yeah.
But who knows? Who knows?
In this version, the word one is capitalized. That's how I figured that it had to be God or Jesus.
Is
the one,
and
this one is the one.
Where is the one?
Verse 13. The one who breaks open the way will go up before them.
Huh.
My commentary just says that lots of prophets came to explain to them that these type of events would happen, but not necessarily how it would happen, and that it was quite laying the scene for Messiah.
Yeah. Anybody else? Well, I only prepared two. Actually, chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 3 all go together.
He's asking me for vowels and words.
Actually, 1, 2, and 3, all three go together, and because they're talking, the first one's the judgment of Samaria, the other one is why Israel, chapter 2 is why Israel is being judged, and chapter 3 is the judgment of Jerusalem. So those three actually go together, but I just didn't have enough time to study well enough to get that third one in there. So next week we will do chapter 3 and probably chapter 4.
That's a good follow on 13. That went out. That's a good kid.
It's a well, yeah. You know. And once again, there's a lot of mysteries that we just don't know. But that is what had been what I had read and intended to accept because of what comes before it and what comes after it. So, But hopefully, y'all will keep me straight next week. Thank y'all.
Thank you.